Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us, wherever you are, wherever you're joining us. If you're joining us on the television airwaves here in the Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you at TVSB. And of course, so many of you are joining us all around the world on all these different platforms. And you can always find us at goodlifetelevision.org. You can go to the YouTube channel and subscribe there. We're at Twitter, we're at all the social media platforms, and we have these amazing people, the full form, long form interviews, and then we also break them up into what we call power clips. And so you can see both of those in all these different platforms at Good Life TV. We're so grateful to be presented by Bunnin Chevrolet, our friends over there across the street. We're grateful for them. And we're grateful for you. It's just such a joyous journey we've been on over these last 4+ years, and just getting to meet some incredible people from all walks of life. And it's been inspiring for us. It's been great to have you with us as we go. And I'm really grateful and excited about my guest today. Jeff Griffin is with me. They call him Griff. So I may call him Griff, but Jeff Griffin is with me from Ogden, Utah. Welcome, sir.
Thank you so much, Dean, for having me. You know, I always like to say that it really looks good on top of the shoulders of giants. And so thank you for letting me sit on your shoulders for a few minutes.
Oh, it's fantastic. I was reading about you over the weekend and just was so encouraged, and looking at some of the different sites and stuff in terms of kind of your journey, and awesome to see the USA jersey behind you there.
Yeah.
Didn't Kobe wear 10 on Team USA?
You know, he could have, you know, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, I like to think, I know for a fact in soccer that number 10 is like the best player. I'm just going to go along with that with basketball, that number 10 is the best player.
I want to say he did. So that's a good linkage there. So let's just kind of rewind in terms of your life. Take us back to kind of where you grew up and your family of origin and so forth, kind of before this accident happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always tell people that I was born in God's country, and that's why I offend the rest of the world when I say that. But I did. I felt like it was like the ideal location. It was the ideal situation. You know, I'm the fifth out of eight, and so I was lost in the middle, like literally lost in the middle. And, wow. You know, some days, like, we'd go to the store, I would go off and wander, and I would come out to the car, and it was gone. And I'm like, okay, literally lost in the middle. But at the same time, you know, my dad was out working and providing for the family, and my mother stayed home and raised us. And if I were to write a biography, it would be titled My Mother's Son. You know, it was because of my mom that, you know, I have such a solid foundation. I remember her telling me a story one time where, you know, she was an English teacher in high school, and her and my dad just got pregnant with their first child, and my dad was going through college. And so my mom helped him get through school, and she wanted to stay home with her kids. And so she went to go tell the head of the English department that this was going to be her last year and that she was going to go home and take care of her kids. And what was interesting is I went to the same school that this lady was still the head of the English department. And so, you know, 20 years later or whatever it was, you know, I know who this woman is, and I won't say the name, but, she looked at my mother when my mother told her that she was going to go home and take care of her kids. She looked at her and she's like, oh, Kayleen, you are a perfect example of a wasted education.
Yeah.
And I look back and, you know, she raised 8 wonderful kids who give back to the community, who have impacted the world. And my mother used her education to bless our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And so I'm like, you know, people are talking about, you know, these buzzwords like, you know, white privilege or privilege, you know, privileged life. And I'll honestly admit, I had a privileged life because I had a mother and a father who loved me and they took care of me. But Dean, we were poor. You know, we were so poor, but I didn't know we were. All I knew is I had to work from 8 o'clock in the morning until noon in the garden and in the beds. But once lunch was over, I could go off and wander. I could go off and explore. You know, beginning of summer, my feet were tender. By the end of summer, they were tattered and torn, and they were like leather, and I could run on the rocks and not even, you know, worry about it. And so I was allowed to explore and just have a wonderful life. And people are like, Griff, you really weren't that poor. And I always like the joke. I'm like, well, listen, I get that. You know, I've been around the world. I've been to third world countries, and there are some poor people. And even the poor here in America are rich compared to the rest of the world. But I always tell people, I'm like, listen, let me just give you a measuring stick to see whether or not you were as poor as my family. And I'm like, I had an older brother and a younger brother. And I'm like, so did you guys ever have like a communal underwear drawer? Because I had to. And I'm like, some of the times it fit, you know, a little loose. Sometimes it was a little tight. And other times it fit just right.
Right. That's hilarious. Yeah. Wow. How amazing. 8 kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I like to think that I'm well balanced, being right smack dab in the middle. I've got some older brothers, some younger brothers and sisters, and I just grew up just loving life. And, you know, I learned to really appreciate the moments, appreciate the things that I was given. And sometimes that wasn't always the case until it was taken away. I don't know if you've ever experienced that before, where you're like, I don't know how good I had it until it's gone. So there's some beautiful learning experiences that I have had along the way. And my mother is a solid foundation to that. And she is definitely not a perfect example of a wasted education. She, in my opinion, is a perfect example of a well-used education.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's such an unsung hero. You know, oftentimes I think and my wife stayed home for 20 plus years with our 5, and it's the hardest job in the world, and it happens to be unpaid. Talk about unsung heroes. I believe that 100%. And I also believe that the greatest thing you can do if you want to change the world in one respect is raise good kids, you know. And of course we're all frail. We all make mistakes. I've made plenty, but fundamentally that's what the biggest thing we have to offer the world is our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes I think, you know, everybody wants to change the world, but I think sometimes we can forget that right in our household, you know, we have offspring. And those are the ones that we're sending out, and those are the ones that are going to be the next generation. And so how they, you know, impact is a pretty big deal. It sounds like your mom and dad did a wonderful job.
You know, I think so. And, you know, I would argue otherwise if anyone brought it to, you know, my attention. But, you know, it was an ideal situation in my mind. You know, my mother taught me what success looks like. And, you know, I said that if I were to write a biography, that the name of the book would be My Mother's Son. And I've also wanted to write a book called, you know, taken into from the phrase from Forrest Gump, but Mama always said, what were the things that Mama always said that really kind of helped me get to the point where I am right now. And so again, I love my mother. She is amazing. And of course, my father, he is one of my heroes. I have this thing called a wall of hall of heroes. And on that wall sits my father and my son. Even though my son is you know, only 22 years old, he is up there and I look up to him, and he just inspires me as well as my dad. And he really is one of the best men that I know of on this.
So great. So great. Jeff's son's 22. He's serving the police department, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he is. He's currently doing that. And you know,
yeah, that's
learning
another
to, learning some, to give back.
Old, Speaking of unsung heroes, that's another group that sometimes we can take for granted. Law enforcement, grateful for that. So take us to the accident, Jeff. To take us to what happened, and then we can start talking about what's happened since.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, as I mentioned, idyllic childhood. My mother taught me how to dream, and that's what I always ask people. I'm like, have you given your heart a reason to beat? You know, are you barely breathing and calling it a life, or are you living life that takes your breath away? And yeah. I had an opportunity to, you know, kind of experience and experiment on that. And as a young kid, my dream was to play football in college. And I remember having the courage enough to tell somebody that. And what was interesting is they gave me all the reasons why I couldn't play on the big stage, to play at college, on the college level. Like, Griff, you're too short, you're too slow. Somebody even said I was too white. So I'm like, okay, too short, too slow, too wide. You know, I have all these things against me, but fortunately for me as a young man, I didn't realize that there was a song inside my soul, and I didn't realize that other people base our possibilities on their limitations.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we sometimes we listen to those boo birds. Sometimes we listen to other people who we believe are experts, but you know, I would recommend that we go inside and listen to this song that sings inside our soul to, you know, to really dream again, to really allow ourselves to open up the floodgates of imagination and dream new dreams. And I continued to chase down my dream and was fortunate enough to receive an invitation from the legendary Hall of Fame coach Lavelle Edwards, inviting me, the short, slow white guy, to come down to his campus there in Provo, Utah. I was raised in Northern Utah, where they breed him to hate him down South. And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. And because I had heard that message my whole life that you can't do this, you can't do that, when I got the letter, I thought he was giving them out to everybody. So I took the letter to my teammates and I'm like, hey, did you guys get this? And they thought I was rubbing it in their faces and tried to take me out of practice. And, you know, life was great. And Dean, I was able to taste the sweetness of success. And I experienced two downs in college. I experienced two downs on that big stage, two downs where I wasn't just in the stadium or on the sidelines or had a jersey on my back, but actually to be out there on that field. And as successful leaders and leaders of success, which I believe are two different things, I believe that our job is not just to get them to the stadium, but to get them out of the stands and onto the sideline, and not just on the sidelines, but out on the field called life. And you know, how many people are living life from the stands or from the sidelines?
Yes.
Or from, you know, the armchair. And that's what they're doing. And so I had an opportunity to experience the taste and taste that sweetness of success, and knew what it would be like to be on the first team.
Yeah. Wow.
And
wow.
And unfortunately, in between seasons, I went home, started my own business, and was painting to earn a living, not pictures, but buildings. And I got a bid from Napoleon Dynamite Country, north of the border, and there in Preston, Idaho. And $3,000 later, and well, 3 days later, and $3,000 richer, I'd have enough money to go back and focus on my dream of being on the big stage. Unfortunately, I cut some corners building up this foundation, putting two levels of scaffolding and a 30-foot ladder on top of that. And when I was at the top of the ladder, the scaffolding slipped out from underneath me, and I came straight down, stuck the landing perfect. If I was a gymnast, but I wasn't, I was a painter. And so my legs came up, my back came down, and my L1 vertebrae exploded inside me. And it left me paralyzed from the waist down. Changed my life forever.
Wow. And you're 19 or 20. How old are you at this point?
Yeah, I am 20 years old at this. Actually, I'm 21 years old at this point. And, you know, I was the strongest I've ever been, the fastest I've ever been, the quickest I've ever been. I was in great shape. My identity was all wrapped up in my physicality. And in one split second, that was taken away. And I found myself next to this unpainted barn with my dreams of playing football shattered right next to me. You know, I tried to move. I tried to, you know, I was hoping that it was kind of like a stinger that I experienced in football, where, you know, it goes away, but then it comes back. And I never came back. In fact, I got to the hospital and the doctor confirmed my fears. While I was there at the job site, my buddy was there with me and he came over and started shaking me. He's like, "Are you okay? Are you?" I'm like, "I don't think you should be doing that."
Right.
And I remember looking up at Doug and saying, "Doug, go call the ambulance." And I remember voicing my fears for the first time out loud. And I'm like, "Go call the ambulance, Doug. I think I'm paralyzed." He's like, "You can't be paralyzed." I think I'm paralyzed. Go call the ambulance. And so he left me there. He left me there as he went to call the ambulance. And here I am next to an unpainted barn. I had just fallen 40 feet. My dreams of playing football shattered. My identity over. And so, you know, there was a big, huge void in my life. And as I mentioned in my book, you know, I entered in that sauna of self-pity where I just felt sorry for myself because I'm like, okay, now what? What do I do next? You know, I found myself shaking my fist at God. I found myself being upset with myself. Life was just nasty. It wasn't even black and white. It wasn't even gray. It was just ugly at the time.
So what do you do? Who was talking to you? Like, were your parents? Did you have a mentor? Like, what were the messages that you were taking in at that point?
I didn't take in much of the message, right? Because I was in such a bad place. I was in that syrupy, sticky sauna of self-pity. And it's so hard to hear things when you're in that situation. It's so hard to be optimistic when you're pessimistic. It's so hard to be able to flip the switch and reframe things when things have been switched off completely. And I was experiencing that situation. My mother would come down once a week and visit with me. The therapists were trying to help me out, but it was horrible. It was ugly for, you know, the first 2 weeks. I had my surgery, you know, and the doctor told me, I gave me a life sentence to never walk, never stand, never move my legs again. They're like, "You'll never walk." And they gave me a 0% chance of having kids. They're like, "It's a 0%. It's the first to go. It's the last to come back." Some of the experts, Dean, told me I wouldn't get married, not because of my wheelchair, but just because of who I am. And as you mentioned, my wife and I have four beautiful biological kids and we've been married 26 years. And,
wow.
And so at that time though, I couldn't see that. At that time, it was too far out into the future. At that time, it was like, okay, my identity is gone. It is over. And so what was interesting is there was a question that was asked to me in the hospital by a patient who happened to be a prisoner from the prison there here in Utah. He was lifting weights. He had an aneurysm in his brain, paralyzed the right side of his body. But that prisoner asked me a question, Dean, that set me free from my prison. And I have never gone back to that sauna.
What did he say?
Yeah, that's the question, right? Everyone wants to know. You got to go get my book to find the answer. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that. I will give you the answer right here. But the thing is like, you know how you are in pain and you just, when you're in pain, you just want to be left alone. And that's the worst place to be, is left alone. We all need a hand up, not a hand out, but a hand up. We all need some help somewhere along the line. And yeah. I've learned in my short life that the greatest men and women of history are men of service.
Yeah.
And so that's why I love what you're doing. And that's why I love what, you know, other people are doing as well. We all need some help. We can't do this on our own.
Yeah.
We all need help. And so for me, that help came from the most unassuming place, from a prisoner who we deem as useless,
right,
you know, in society. Yeah. But this prisoner, you know, they stopped feeding me in the hospital in bed. They fed me if I got out. It took me 30 minutes just to get out of my bed into my wheelchair. It took me an hour to dress myself. Things that took seconds took hours and minutes. And I was just frustrated. And it was time to eat. I got transferred into my chair. I was rolling down that sterile hall of the hospital, just feeling sorry for myself. You know, tears were starting to appear. I went to the cafeteria, got my food, and I wanted to be left alone. And by sharing my pain, I hope I don't diminish anyone else's pain. And I don't want anyone to think that my pain is worse or better than theirs, because I've learned, Dean, that all pain hurts, no matter the size.
Yeah.
And but I was in so much pain. I went and grabbed my food, went to the corner of the cafeteria, wanted to be left alone. And I'm just flavoring my food with my tears, and all of a sudden, plop, this tray goes down in front of me. And I look up, and I'm about to tell that guy to go take a hike when he asked the question that changed my life. He looked at me, I looked at him, and he's like, "Right, Ryan, dude." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Ryan, dude." And I recognized in his slurred speech the question that he was asking me. And the question that he asked me was, "Why are you crying, dude?" And that question flipped a switch and helped me reframe things, helped me see things that I hadn't seen before. It helped me to focus on what I can do instead of what I couldn't do. Down the table was a man who was paralyzed from the neck down. He had a halo screwed to his skull, and he couldn't even feed himself. He was dependent on everyone else to do everything. And then next to him was another guy who was paralyzed from the neck down, but he had some movement in his arm. They taped a fork to his finger and thumb, and he's attempting to feed himself. And by the time the fork got to his mouth, all the morsels had fallen off, and he was struggling just to feed himself. And I'm looking around, I'm like, why am I crying? I've got arms and hands to feed myself. I can hug people. I can feel. I can transfer. Even though it may take me a long time to do that, I can still do some things. And so in that moment, I was taught a lesson of a lifetime from a prisoner who set me free from my prison. And that is, Griff, you can focus on what you can't do, or you can focus on what you can do. And from that moment forth, that's all I did, was focus on what I can do. And it just changed my perspective, and it changed everything. And I was able to sift through the broken, my broken dreams and shattered back, and start to dream new dreams, and start to live life in color again.
Mm, how fantastic. Wow. What a great question. And what a great perspective shift. I had a mentor one time tell me, if I could give you a gift, I'd give you the gift of perspective. And it perspective changes everything, if you really think about it. And that sounds like that's what happened that day for you. Well, that's powerful. By the way, the book, Jeff Griffin is my guest. The book is I'm Possible. It's spelled like impossible. I think that's very clever. And the website is griffinmotivation.com, griffinmotivation.com, where you can find Jeff. It's an amazing story that he has. And so you went on, you played the Paralympic Games in Athens, Greece, silver medalist with Team USA. And so you kind of stayed in the athletic realm, not playing college football, but you have been very athletic. Take us through some of the highlights or some of your experiences in the years since that happened.
Yeah. So, after my dreams of playing football on the big stage were shattered and crushed, at least playing football, I ran into a man named Mike Schlappi here in Utah. He's a four-time Paralympic athlete. And somebody gave me his name. I called him up and he introduced me to the world of wheelchair sports. I went down and played some tennis in my everyday chair. And I even had my body brace on still when I went down there and played. And I signed up for a tournament, and that's when I met him. And he's like, "Oh my gosh, this guy is athletic. Come play wheelchair basketball with us." And I'm like, "Sure, absolutely." And so when I found out that they compete in the Paralympics, I'm like, "I'm in." And I told people, I'm like, "Hey, listen, I'm going to go to the Paralympics." They're like, "This and Griff, you can't do it. You haven't gone to college and played wheelchair basketball." And they gave me all the reasons why I can't. And this word "I can't" eliminate from your vocabulary, because it's poisonous, it's debilitating, it's limiting. And as soon as you tell yourself that you can't, or you accept other people telling you that you can't, your brain accepts it immediately and shuts down all the opportunities and all the possibilities of coming up with the solution. And that's why we don't find the solution. Right, is because we're focusing on what we can't do. And so I'm like, all right, fine. I've heard this before. I'm like, the desire and dream is to go play in the Olympics. I wanted to go to the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, Australia, but wasn't invited to the tryouts. And so I'm like, okay, 04 is in Athens. I'm going, whatever it takes. I'm going. And there's only, I don't know if you guys know this, but the NBA kicks off the All-Star event on Thursday. And there are every NBA team has a wheelchair affiliate, almost every team. And so we kick off the All-Star events on Thursday. You know, they kick us out on Friday and bring in the big boys. I like to think the big boys have already played, but yeah, I participated in 8 of those All-Star events and happened to be MVP 4 of the times.
Wow.
And during those 8 times there during the All-Star event, Guinness representative showed up and said, "Hey, listen, we want to do an event for for your wheelchair players." They asked me if I wanted to be a part of that. I'm like, "Heck yeah, absolutely." But there's about 2,000 wheelchair basketball players, ranging from little kids, juniors, to collegiate league, to the elite league, and they only invite 24 to come try out. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the 24. We went to Colorado Springs. We found out really quick who was in shape, who wasn't, because we were at the altitude. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the 12 that was chosen to represent our country to go to Athens, Greece. And it was an amazing experience, once in a lifetime experience for some, an experience that no one will ever experience. And I was just soaking it up and enjoying it and loving it. And what was interesting is just, it hit me after the games. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. How did I get here? How did I get here when everyone told me that I couldn't do that, where I couldn't go to college and I made it and played 2 downs? But I was the youngest trust manager at that time. And I had a family and had 2 kids working a full-time job and playing wheelchair basketball. I'm like, how did I get there? How did I get married when everyone told me I wouldn't be able to get married? How did I have 2 kids when I was given a 0% chance? How was I able to, do all these things? And so I'm like, yeah, how did I get here? Maybe the world can be blessed from this. And so, that summer after the Paralympics in 05, I decided to write down those flecks of gold that I discovered on how it got me there. And the outline just came, and I'm writing, and I did a chapter a week, and I fine tuned it, and I did that. And in less than 3 months, my book was finished.
Wow.
The book that you can get on my website called I'm Possible, The Desire, Dream, and Do. And it's one of the greatest accomplishments, Dean, because I got a D- in English in 6th grade, and my high school English teacher told me that I would never write a comprehensive sentence, and that was validated my freshman year in college. First day you're writing that paragraph, day number 2, they call 6 of us out of the auditorium, out of the 300 that were there. I was one of the 6. I go bounding back to the back of the room, and I'm like, what did I win? And they're like, you won a date with the remedial English teacher. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, that's why you need it. And I learned so much in that remedial English class. But, to be able to write that book in such a short time, it was, it was like a divine download. It just came to me. And I was just I was writing these things and identifying what were these flecks of gold. And over this time, I started to experiment. We started to refine things and define things. And eventually we took these flecks of gold and forged them into gold nuggets, into 10 steps or 10 gold nuggets that are predictable, repeatable, and proven over time. And we have used them on some of the harshest critics called teenagers. And I've learned after going into the executive world that, the executive board are even harsher than teenagers, because adults are just teenagers who haven't figured it out.
Right. Right. GriffinMotivation.com is where you want to go. And so are you doing like coaching, or like how are you working with people in terms of if somebody wanted to really engage you, how do they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to the website, griffmotivation.com, it's like the mythical beast, GRFFIN. The griffin is a half lion, half eagle. I try to convince my wife that I'm a mythical beast, and she's like, you're neither a beast nor mythical. I'm like, I once was, and maybe, you know, in a way I still am, but if you go to my website, you can go and take a look at where we've been and how to contact me. But, you know, we speak all over the world. You know, I believe that, you know, we have a transformational message and a life altering experience for leaders who want to lead. Not all leaders lead. And so, you know, we help leaders lead. We help leaders impact the world, make more money, and master their mindset. You know, over these years, we've been able to really identify those tools that will help those leaders and individuals that want to level up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in Sweden, 2019, at the 8th World Congress in Mind Training. There were like all the experts, you know, Lars Erik Unestal, you know, is the father of mind training, and before Tony Robbins and all these other people, there's Lars Erik Unestal. And what's interesting is he partnered up with Charles Garfield, who worked with the Apollo Project, who coined the phrase peak performance. And so that's who Lars Erik Unestal is. And so everyone all over the world came, showed up. There were formula race car drivers. There were Premier Soccer League coaches. There were gold medalists. There were, you know, Nobel nominees. There were professors all over the world that had, you know, more letters in front of their name than my name in itself. And then there's some guy from Cache Valley that they got to show up there. One of the guys there was Michel Gagné. He was the Canadian Olympic mind coach for them. And Malaysia hired him to help with their athletes. In fact, 2016 was the first year that Malaysia got a gold medal because of Michelle's work. Hmm. And when I went and shared my speech with this audience, you know, I only had 30 minutes to share. What I could share like 3 days, 3 weeks, you know, of material and stuff. And they only gave me 30 minutes, but the gentleman in front of me took 5 of my minutes. And so I only had 25 minutes. And after the second standing ovation, I'm telling him to sit down. I'm like, listen, we've got to get through this stuff. And at the end of the 25 minutes, as I walk across the stage into Lars Erik Unestal's arms, because, you know, that's what I do, is I address the elephant in the room when I go and speak. And that elephant is how good looking I am. No, I'm totally joking, but I am in a wheelchair. I went from 6'1" to 4'7", and people can see that I'm physically paralyzed, but I've learned, Dean, that most of us, if not all of us, have been paralyzed from the demons of doubt, fear, and complacency.
Mm.
And as I'm standing next to Lars Erik Unestal in this room full of these major players in the mind set arena, Lars Erik looks to me and says, Jeff, thank you so much for showing us in 25 minutes what we've been trying to teach these last 40 years.
Ugh. Wow.
And Michel Gagné comes down and finds me and says, Griff, you are 1% of the 1%. I have to work with you. And so just to kind of give you an idea. And so I go and speak all over the world, and that's my mission. That's my calling, is to speak. It's to reach those millions out there. And I also do some coaching as well, some executive coaching, some life coaching, you know, whatever, you know, mindset coaching. And so, you know, we get to help companies, as I said, you know, impact the world around them, make more money, and master their mindset. One company that I spoke for twice and worked with one of their executives, the owner's son was leading the company at the time, and he took his dad's company from 5 million to 50 million, and he's hitting the ceiling and he can't go any higher. And so with the aid of my help and some of those gold nuggets that we came and shared with their company, he and I together took their company from 50 million to 210 million in 2 years.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. And so they work. They work with these companies. They work with larger companies, mid-sized companies, smaller companies. They work for, you know, elementary assemblies. They work for, mom pa's shops. And it's, you know, it's just so fun to go out there and to help people overcome that mental paralysis that I believe is the number one constraint in keeping us from achieving our dreams. You know, yeah. I always say that every minute you doubt it's possible, you give up 60 seconds in finding the solution. Mm. And I've learned, Dean, that you are the solution to impossible, that we are the solution, that we, you know, that we've just got to unblock those blockages and get rid of those demons and those dragons and those doubts and those fears and complacencies, and really tap into that courage and that faith.
Yes.
And that success that that we all have inside of us, because we all have the ability to achieve our dreams and desires. We all come from infinite intelligence. It's just a matter of reminding ourselves and getting connected to the main source, the main power, which in my opinion is the great I Am. And he's in all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Did you play safety in football?
I was receiver. I was a receiver. Slow, short, white guy.
Well, you must have had great hands. That's great. Yeah, I've got two boys playing high school football right now. So I the thing that I say to them the most is, you've got what it takes. And I think that's something that the world and the noise is it's just really a, in some respects, on who are you going to believe, who you know, the voices of the doubt, the even, or even just the internal voice that we have, where it's, you know, if you're looking for reasons to not take a risk, you're going to find them. You know, and it's who are you listening to? And I think your message, and in terms of combating those fears, that complacency, whatever it is that's getting you, you know, stuck, is a powerful and beautiful thing.
100%. And a lot of times we are our own worst enemy. And, you know, that self-talk has come from other people. It's really not self-talk. It's really other talk that we allowed to become self-talk. And so again, it's, if, you know, because it's been programmed in us, if we understand that, then we can learn how to reprogram it out of us and put in the new stuff. And so I always say the solution to pollution is dilution. It's like, add more good stuff, add more stuff that you want in. It's, you know, it's very simple. But as the Navy SEALs taught me, as I went and trained with them in 2019 as well, you know, like, Griff, it's simple to be a Navy SEAL. It's just not easy. And so some of these tools and skills are so simple, but because of years and years of past programming, you know, it may be a difficult thing to change if we don't start now. And that's the key. You know, the Chinese proverb says the best time to plant a tree, you know, is 20 years ago.
Right.
The next best time is today.
Right. Right. So true. So powerful, man. I'm fired up. It's very inspiring. I'm looking forward to getting to know you more. Certainly
encourage people to check it out. GriffinMotivation.com. GriffinMotivation.com. He's on Instagram at JeffGriffin10. LinkedIn, you can find him on all the platforms. The book is I'm Possible. Jeff Griffin has been my guest. So grateful, man. This is wonderful work. What a story. Honored to know you.
Well, the honor's been mine, Dean, and I appreciate you allowing me to come on your platform and shine a little light on what you're doing. And, you know, and for those listeners who are still with us, you know, if you go to my website, grab that book. I got another book called Endless Possibilities. If you get both of them, shipping is free. And for your listeners, Dean, if they put the coupon code LOVE in the shopping cart, will knock off 50%. So it's like buy one, get one free. Shipping is free. And fantastic. The holiday seasons are coming up.
Yes.
You just want to give.
I love it. I think I'm going to do that today. Use the code LOVE, everybody.
Yes.
Jeff Griffin, thank you. Thank you, man. Appreciate you. And thank you all for joining us. What a treat. This is... what a treat. And we'll see you next time.